So first, we'd like to go through the background of Select Health and Intermountain Healthcare. Intermountain Healthcare actually owns Select Health, so they are our parent company. We'll go through our early self-funded strategy and then what we've done to refine the strategy since and what the results have been. So the mission of Intermountain Healthcare is to help people live the healthiest lives possible. They really do believe in that mission, and that is what we're striving for. Intermountain Healthcare, the history, it was established in 1975. The LDS Church donated 15 hospitals to the community with the understanding this would be a nonprofit, community-based hospital system. It was formed to be a model health system. We now have 22 hospitals, 185 clinics, 1,200 multi-specialty physicians and mid-level providers, and we are one of Utah's largest insurance carriers. In 2012, we expanded into Idaho, so we do have a partnership with St. Luke's Health Plan. Select Health was actually established in 1983 to do the self-funded business for our employees. We are a not-for-profit health plan. We serve over 870 members in Utah and Idaho. We are a subsidiary of Intermountain Healthcare, and we have a strategic alliance with the St. Luke's Health System in Idaho. Our vision is to be a model health plan by providing high-value health benefits, superior service, but at an affordable cost. So access, service, and cost. The benefits of being in an integrated system are we get the clinical quality, service quality, and by clinical quality and service quality, what I mean is our systems talk to each other. Our members talk to our providers. Our providers have certain criteria that they have agreed to meet, so we have integrated systems. We have lower costs. We have population health management. Recently, within the last couple of years, we've rolled out what we call our SHARE product, which our providers agree to meet certain levels of criteria, and if they do, they get an incentive payment, so value-based. So early on in the self-funding strategy, and this is before my time with Select Health, the primary focus was on the insured products. We offered self-funding for the Intermountain employees and ASO products for about 15 or so other groups. We didn't consider ASO a growth strategy nor a core competency, and we used it basically to retain the groups as they were moving from fully insured to self-funded. And we weren't very good at it, to say honestly. The slight difference from the insurance business is the funding mechanisms. We allowed for some limited variation of plan design, but I know more times than not we would go back to a self-funded client and say, well, that's not our standard. Well, we all know that a self-funded client doesn't want to hear that's not our standard, right? So we had to kind of work around that. We did standard admin services. We don't allow carve-outs, no stop-loss difference, care, disease management all had to be done within Select Health and Intermountain. There was no admin fee price differential. If that's what your admin fee was for fully insured, that's what it was for self-funded. We had very limited experience and no growth. I mean, we stuck around 15 to 20 groups for a very long time. But when the ACA came along, we knew that we had to increase the attractiveness of the self-funding for all the group sizes. So we kind of got a little bit serious about it. As you can see, the Utah and Idaho market penetration, the self-funded continues to grow. In Idaho, it's a little bit more flat, but I think with all the groups that can self-fund in Idaho, they already are. But in Utah, we still have a lot of growth potential. And some of the challenges that we've had is our competitors. Our competitors also offer the Intermountain Network. So if they come in with lower admin fees, obviously a client's going to look at that and say, I can get the same network, but I can get a lower admin fee, therefore I'm getting a better deal. They also offer carve-outs, which we didn't do with the menu pricing. And to be honest, Select Health was quite behind on the enhanced services like the online reporting and mobile applications and things like that. The internal challenges have been very interesting as well, because you can have, I'll talk to the actuary people back there, they look at it and say an admin fee is at least in our shop, an admin fee is an admin fee. It costs just as much to do self-funded as it does to do fully insured. And if you look at the way that the allocations have been done throughout the years, and I don't know about your organizations, but basically they say, you have 25% of the business, I'm giving you 25% of the cost, regardless if you do anything for me or not. So for the last couple of years, we've been challenging that quite a bit. We were lacking self-funded expertise, and the mixed administration model is that it costs X number of dollars for us to run this shop, and you have 25% of my membership, and I'm going to charge you 25% of the allocation. So some of the improvement opportunities that we found were flexibility, reporting, and online tools and wellness programs. And guys, you can interrupt me anytime. So as a result of that, what we did is hired a self-funded product manager. That's me. And I've been tasked with improving the overall performance and the marketability of our self-insured product offering. So this is what we've done to do it. Select Health, we really feel like, does provide the lowest total cost access to Intermountain. In fact, we've been assured that we do. Regardless of the network, regardless of the admin fees, the total overall cost is in our clients' favor if they come with Select Health versus, say, a United, who can still get Intermountain, but not at the same rate. We've been able to get with our sales team and say, go ahead.
Can I ask you a question about that comment? Because that does come up very frequently.
Right.
You've got to be in sync with your strategies, with your health system.
Yes.
And their willingness
to share
those kinds of decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Like you
right.
So how did you go? Can you talk about that process a little bit more and how you work with Intermountain?
Well, what we've done is we've analyzed, we're working with Intermountain right now to be able to release all of the fee schedules and all of our claims data to different brokers and stop-loss companies so that they can go to bat for us and say, yeah, they really are total lowest cost. That's still in the process. However, we have gone through and analyzed about 70,000 claims in the last couple of years based on COB data and our competitors, and we can show that within our own system, we are anywhere between 15 and 19% difference.
And what's the incentive for Intermountain to do that? What percentage of you are you of their business? And, you know, what prevents United from going to them and saying, look, we want to work out a great deal? You know, and how do you get, you know, your system to withstand that temptation to...
Well, we've gone back to them and we find that there are no legal reasons within the contract that we can't show it. There are obviously political reasons, right? Because we don't want to make our parent company mad. But they are reviewing it. What they're a little bit leery of us doing is going down to the CPT code level, because they know that in some of the like radiology, pathology areas, we get a significant discount based off of the other carriers. Now, I don't know what the other carriers get because they won't share that with us. Obviously, it would not be good for them to do that. But if we can get them to even let us do it in broad ranges, like inpatient, we're better than X percent, you know, or at least even give the discounts out, which we've already calculated, so. Yeah.
So you said that Intermountain has shared with you that you are as much as 15 to 20% better?
That's what we found on our own COB data.
So kind of going back to Dennis's question, from Intermountain's perspective, are they kind of leaving money on the table potentially? Do they need you to be that much better than United? Couldn't they just give you a 5 to 10 point advantage?
Well,
you know, and still.
Now, when I say 15 to 19%, that's on the facilities.
On
right. The physicians, we actually pay our physicians better.
Okay.
Than our competition.
Gotcha.
So it comes out to be around a 7% overall.
Okay. Thank you.
So yeah, and that's a good point. And to that point, too, as far as the system is concerned, maybe they don't care that somebody goes to United because the money still comes to the system,
right?
But then they have to consider that we lose business.
Yeah. Would Intermountain say that that's due to clinical integration, eliminating waste, that they have that cost advantage, or they just operate cheaper?
No, I think they're eliminating waste. So what they're doing right now is they're trying to establish that every procedure is done the same way, so that if it's done in one facility one way, it's done in the other facility. Plus, they're trying to consolidate somewhat, so maybe all the hearts go to IMC and all the cancers go to LDS. So that's how they're trying to get their costs down.
Do you, we have a question over here?
Uh-huh. Do you have... So I'm assuming the 7% variance is based on your full network. Do you have special arrangements for extra savings if you offer a narrow network or enhanced network?
And we do.
If yes, what that looks like.
Yeah, and I'll talk about that later in the slides.
Okay, thank you.
But yes, we do. Yeah.
Does Intermountain give any consideration or put a dollar figure on the steerage that you give them? So, you know, X amount of dollars per belly button that actually comes to them because they're through the health plan.
Do they give us anything?
Right.
No.
I wonder if anybody else does, if anybody else has any comments to that. We're trying to figure out what we as a health plan mean to our system so we know that we drive business there, and we're trying to find a, you know, per belly button figure for that.
Yeah.
Well, I can say since I become the product manager, I do point out to them every year, this is what your self-funded paid into the system this year.
Mm-hmm.
So that they understand how important they are.
That question both of the value of the health plan as a strategic partner with the health system. So how does that help you enter new markets? How does the health plan help you with expansion? Those sorts of questions. So the strategic aspect of it, and then there's the financial benefits of it. And a number of plans have dealt with that. Just FYI, coming up in June, Health New England went through a project they've completed with Kaufman Hall, who did that very kind of study. What was the value from a monetary and a strategic standpoint that the health plan brought into the health system? What would your financial statements look like if you didn't have a health plan? What kind of decisions should you be making around the kind of tertiary, secondary, and primary care services that you as a health system should offer, given that you've got a health plan? Those kind, and to my question to Cora Lee, what should the network strategy be of the and the contracting strategy of the health mm-hmm. system be, that given that you've got a health plan versus if you didn't have a health plan? Those kinds of questions. So hopefully someone from your organization will attend that meeting, or it'll be available online and recorded as well. That's at our June meeting here, actually in this very room, on the 15th through the 17th, 14th through the 16th. I'm sorry, I get those dates. So good question.
So on the fee schedule transparency, we did meet with Intermountain like 3 weeks ago and expressed to them that they really do need to share the data. As far as the ASO clients, they get all of the data anyway. They can go get a data dump, so they know what our discounts are. They know what our total cost of care is. We pay all of our facilities on inpatient on DRGs, so I don't know if that makes a difference. I don't know if United does the same or not. So on the admin fees. So what I've been doing the last couple of years is going in and truing up with the allocations. I go to the individual department managers and say, really? You're charging me with X number of full-time employees. What are you doing for me? So we've been able to lower our admin fees. We trued up with the allocations. And we've also been able to improve our ASO efficiencies by having somebody in there. I ran a TPA for about 10 years, so I understand that concept. And I don't think that we've had anybody in the position before that's actually been in a TPA business. There are network differences for the self-funding. For instance, Value is our lowest cost network. We will not offer it to a self-funded client. It's strictly for a fully insured client. And Share is our high-performing network with the aligned incentives, and that also is only on a fully insured basis. No, yeah, fully insured. That's right. So we do offer Med and Care and Select Health. Select Health is the Idaho network, and then we have Care, which is a little bit higher of a fee schedule but has more providers than the Med network, which is all of Utah. And we have, in the past 2 years, taken our networks in Utah and Idaho and combined them. So if you go to Idaho, you get Select Health. If you come to Utah, you get Select Med. Some of the things that we've also done to strategize and maybe grow our business a little bit is ensure that we have ongoing training and education for our customer service people, for our claims processors. Be sure that they know the mindset for a self-funded client is totally different than the mindset for a fully insured. So we've broken them out into a self-funded workforce. We have our claims and appeals team. They only do self-funded. We have customer service teams that are only self-funded. We recently broke out our medical management teams to be only self-funded and fully insured so that they don't get them all mixed up and they know that they have to look at the plan documents rather than, oh, this is our standard, right? We have our own self-funded stop-loss and finance teams and account management teams. We have also in the past couple of years rolled out online reporting. These are just some of the reports we have. We have a group summary. We have analytics for the medical and the RX enrollment. Plus we have, you know, your standard reports, your lag report, your turnaround time reports, your pend reports. Those type of things are available for all of our ASO clients and their brokers. Plus they can go down and do just downloads. You want your data, go get it.
Coralie, I have a question. I'm a little slow. Shoot. I'm sorry. So on that previous slide with the different teams that you've got,
uh-huh.
The next one, anything that you learned, and this was pretty granular, anything that you learned in terms of staffing ratios how is the customer service team for this product different than the customer service team for fully insured? For example, you know, are the staffing ratios different? Are the education needs different?
The staffing ratios, like for a customer service, on the claims, we have 10 people that do our self-funded claims, but we get about an 80% auto adjudication rate, so that helps a lot.
Select Health has a very high auto adjudication rate.
Yeah.
Your average is higher than 80%, if I recall correctly. So
I think it's for the self-funded, it's around 80%.
Uh-huh.
It might be higher overall. Mm-hmm. So on the claims processors, we have 10 people that do nothing but self-funded claims processing, and they run out of work because that's the first claims we do. Once they run out of work, we do have them go ahead and move into the general queues and just process those claims. So ratios on that I couldn't give you. I could on the customer service. It's about one customer service person for every 2,500 employee lives. So.
Employee lives versus
members. So other enhancements that we've done is we now have rolled out a transparency tool where a member can go to their MyHealth, put in what they're going to have done, whether it's a delivery or whatever, and it'll look at their benefits and tell them how much they're going to end up owing on that procedure. MyHealth is a member portal that we have that has all of your test results as long as you're going to an in-network provider.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
On your transparency tool, does it take into consideration the differing discounts?
It does.
Okay.
Based on what network you're on. Yeah. My health, if you're going to network providers, all of your test results will be on there and all of that information will be there. The mobile applications we rolled out about a year and a half ago where you can go get your ID card, you can find out where you're at with your deductible and all of that. We recently redesigned our web to make it more modern. It was pretty ugly, I have to say. And we've improved our wellness platform. Also, we have numerous integration initiatives right now with Intermountain Healthcare because we have care management at Select Health. They have care management at the facility, but we don't talk to each other, right? So we're working on getting that integrated, and we have one more region to put on iCenter, and then that will be done. So that if I'm the member and I'm being managed by Select Health, I'm not going to get phone calls from Intermountain and vice versa. So,
Corley, are your member-facing item like MyHealth and the mobile apps and the website design, are they the same as for your other commercial products, or are they a totally unique?
No, they are the same. The only difference would be if that particular client wanted their logo, we would do that.
Okay.
Okay.
Otherwise, their interaction and engagement is the same.
Yeah.
If you were a fully insured, if my employer was fully insured versus self-funded.
Right. So, recently, our as you can see here, our fully insured, our self-funded in 2015 crossed the line of our fully insured. So, that's where we started. You know, we have a lot of fully insured going to self-funded. And to retain the business, obviously, you want to let them do that, right?
I'd be curious as to the experience of other folks in the room. Anybody else crossed that path? Yeah, at Geisinger?
Yeah, I think it was January of 16, we just exceeded the path of the commercial fully insured.
Really?
Yep, by just a couple thousand. But
the trend is there. Anybody else experiencing something like that, Brad?
Yeah, I think Providence has more self-funded lives as of 2010, so it's been quite a while for us.
So you crossed that quite some time ago. What do you think about your market? Drove it maybe faster than other markets or your product? Or, I mean, any guess? Or?
The presence of a couple of very large accounts. So we have two accounts that have more than 100,000 lives, and so that in itself gets there, and then later on we added the Intel account, so another 15,000 lives.
The two big employers. Yeah. That kind of brings up a question I did want to ask. I'm sorry, Corley,
no, you're
hijacking
good.
It a little
you're
bit,
good.
But I was curious in thinking about yours the product that you build and how you test ideas out. I was just curious by a show of hands, for how many of you is your system owner your largest ASO contract? And keep those hands up for how many of you, then I'll add in, is your system owner one of your top five or so? So almost everybody in the room. And so, you know, how are you leveraging that relationship? We're going to talk a little bit tomorrow. Neil's going to talk about, you know, how to, are you testing things out with your health system, and, you know, that you can take to the marketplace. But I was curious as to, Corley, if there was anything as you started to go through this process, you know, that was being driven by your health system owner
This year we actually offered for the Intermountain employees the share product, which we said we would never do for fully insured. But that is something that we have had a lot of response from the self-funded clients, indicating that they were interested in getting into the share product. The problem that we have with it is the incentives that we pay the providers. We're not sure how to not commingle that money. Because if we're going to have to pay the provider X number of dollars for this fully self-funded client versus a fully insured, which comes out of our bank account, we've got to figure out how to do that without commingling. So we'll try that out with Intermountain, since it's all their money anyway. right? And see if we can come up with how we do that. Another thing that I've found very difficult, and I don't know about the rest of you guys, is that the health plan will make decisions on how they want certain things to be paid. Like, we decided this year as a health plan we're going to cover group therapy, or we're going to cover family therapy, or we're going to cover autism. And for us to go back to our self-funded clients and say, okay, now we're going to cover this is going to be our standard, do you want it? They kind of get tired of us going back to them all the time, but we really can't control when the health plan decides they're going to change a benefit. So I found that kind of difficult as well. This shows our growth since 2012. We've grown 33 groups, 17 of them are new, and 16 moved from the fully insured. So 50-50 on that one. And this slide, I think, is interesting because it kind of shows our competition. We're still right in there within the competition. This is Utah only. We have another 27,000-28,000 lives in Idaho that are self-funded. But Regents grew quite a bit last year compared to where they were. United Healthcare grew quite a bit, and we did lose some clients to UMR. But Cigna jumped way up there. But if you notice in the Utah market, the others, which is your other TPAs and stuff, they appear to be down quite a bit. But we don't know if Cigna really grew or if they're playing with their books. Because based on what they reported as revenue, looks like they put one big group in Utah. So
are you getting all of this data just from are you getting all of this data just from NAIC filings for the entire state of Utah, since that's where you're located, or is there some more granular data set that you're getting?
We get this data from the Utah Department of Insurance.
Oh, they just give it to you?
Yeah, it's public.
So do you have any idea what clients there are that maybe are shifting between carriers and things like that? I mean,
down to that granular.
Right, or counties or where the largest employers are, where you can back into that. The other question was, you know, what is the profit margin difference between your fully insured and your self-funded business? If you guys have done it sounds like you've done a lot of work doing cost accounting to kind of figure out just exactly what the costs are, what's the margin?
Our large employer, fully insured, is a little bit more profitable than the self-funded, but the self-funded actually does quite well. I don't know what the percentage is, but we've done well. We did about double what we did last year, this year. So. In the margin, yeah. Which is another reason for me to go back and say, well, okay, lower my admin fees, right?
Yep. Question. I had to step out for part of your presentation, so hopefully you didn't touch on this, but I was impressed with the number of customers you transitioned and or new that you signed on since, I think it was 2012, maybe you said. Can you touch base on how your organization approaches implementations?
Yeah, I can. Not very well.
We don't either.
Actually, recently we did form an implementation team, and we're in the process of creating the checklists and everything. We will have one person that interfaces directly with the client, with everybody from a different department with them. But to say it, yeah, we haven't done it well. And I think some of that is because they're coming from fully insured, and we just, we know what to do, right?
Yeah, so going back to kind of the middle of the presentation, as it relates to the admin allocation, and then it sounds like you made a transition to self-insured specific member services.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell me a little bit more about how you kind of helped your organization adjust that allocation methodology?
Sure. So what I did was I went to all of the managers and said, okay, how many people do you really have working on my business? How many are working at it 100% of the time versus 60%? And then I went back to the budget and said, okay, but you told me you can do it with 3, but you charged me with 12. So I have to get into the manager's minds and say, okay, you can't do that. If it only takes 3 people to do my business, That's all I want you to charge me with.
So it's more of a brute force methodology than, all right. And then
it
as
is,
you,
it's walking up and saying, really, what do you do for me?
Yeah, exactly. And then it sounds like you maybe originated the transition to those dedicated staffing for self-insured. Yeah. Could you tell me a little bit more about how you went about that process and what the reaction was internally?
Yeah, the reaction was pretty good. A couple years ago in 2012, we went into the Medicare, Medicaid business as well. So we kind of used that model that they used, and this is not a product, this is a program. This is a self-funded program, so you have to change the way you think about things. It's not a product. You are self-funded experts now. Therefore, you got to think a little bit differently. You got to, you know, you're looking out for the client's money versus, you know, it's Select Health, and we can pay whatever we want because we can't do that anymore. So it's taken a long time to get the mindset changed. And that's all it is, I think, is a mindset.
Just real quick, just to piggyback on the question that was out earlier. So when you did reallocate the FTEs, the 3 or 12 example they used, did that make your fully insured admin go up higher?
It did a little bit, yeah.
Okay, so you were just shifting costs at that point?
Yeah, it's, you know, you're kind of squeezing the balloon. You're right about that. But if that's where the costs really need to be, then that's where they need to be. So not only do you have to look at that, but then you have to look at your efficiencies, right? Okay, so if you put 12 people on the self-funded business and you only really need 3, what are those other people doing, and do we need them anymore? Okay. That sounds really cold, but...
Did you see any adverse effect on the fully insured block then at that point, or...?
We haven't.
You have not seen that, okay.
Not yet. I would say not yet. Because I'm not done. Any other questions?
Other questions. Joe?
So you mentioned the number of groups. What's the actual number of new lives that have come over versus the lives that you've lost, I guess at least lost on the fully insured side as they've moved to self-funded?
So... I wish I had those numbers for you. So 16 of the 33 groups came over from fully insured.
Right.
And I would say the number of lives within those groups was probably about 12, 13,000.
Okay.
We did lose 5 groups last year to UMR, which came to about 10,000. So I'm still a little bit ahead self-funded wise.
Got it.
Down a little bit fully insured.
Got it. Okay.
Other questions for Coralie? Really, you were one of those folks that came over from TPA business.
Yeah.
So to follow Keith's advice, Select Health is listening to you. Although when I asked you that question at lunch, you said, well, they're starting to,
yeah.
So could you talk a little bit about that shift to put in you as a product manager and to separate out, you know, the personnel, the staffing and the personnel. Could you talk about that transition organizationally and everything a little bit?
Well, let me tell you, the first job that I had with Select Health is they actually reached out to me and asked me if I would come in and look at the system and see if it was flexible enough to do ASO business, because they kept hearing from the business system support, oh, we can't do that, oh, we can't do that, right? So I came in and looked at the system for about a week and did a report on it, and based on what information I had gathered, figured, oh yeah, we can do it. And then I was actually hired in as a business system analyst. So we went through and I started getting involved with all the ASO business and reviewing all their plan documents and saying, well, can we automate this? Can we automate that? And started kind of changing the thinking a little bit there. And then I was approached to be the product manager for the self-funded business a couple years ago. Getting them, operations was great as far as separating their people, their HBSs and their claims processors, because they know it's very specialized, right? So they were a lot easier to work with and had been going down that direction anyway. The areas that I'm having challenges with are like enrollment, you know, getting them to be fully self-funded, and appeals. They're now fully self-funded, and I really had a challenge in care management, you know, because the more I got into the care management, the more people I made angry, because, you know, I would tell them, you're really not doing a very good job, you know. So...
That didn't go over well.
Not too well. After a while, you know, though, you know, when we started producing reports that would show them what they were doing, they'd have to say, yeah, you're right. We're not doing a very good job. So now we have our own self-funded care management team, and we're able to pull reports and say, this is what you're doing. Let's see if we can get some improvement.
Any other questions or comments? Rick?
I assume from what you were saying that ASO is its own profit center, and I was wondering if you produce a P&L specific to ASO, and if so, what impacts does that have for you as a product manager?
We do produce a P&L. Based on the allocations that we're given, can you further explain your question?
Well, I don't know, but maybe it's a question for the group of which of the plans produce a product level P&L, profit and loss statement for ASO, because I've found in my experience it's somewhat uncommon.
Yeah, we do.
And I was gathering that you do.
We do.
And I was thinking it would have a positive effect in terms of all of the kinds of changes that you're trying to implement in measuring outcomes and so forth.
It does have a positive effect because it helps when you can go to the management, like the CEO and the CFO, and say, well, wait a minute, look at the profit we made last year.
So, yeah. So IU does, and Providence, and Geisinger.
Right. There are some areas that you can't separate, your IT and that type of thing. You can't separate those. Mm-hmm. So we do that based. How much scale?
Yeah, margin. Just because you add, as an example, you add 10,000 lives, which didn't need to hire another employee.
We went last year from about a $9 million profit to 15 this year.
Any other questions or comments, or does anyone have something that you want to share about your organizational structure, underlying strategies in your ASO products?
Suggestions cool. are welcome.
That's great. Coralie, thank you, because I felt like yeah, and that presentation really kind of, I think, embodies the alliance in the sense that you were willing to kind of open yourself up and say, this is what has worked. This is where we started. This is what we knew we had to do. This is kind of the pains that we went through to do that and where it's worked and not worked. So thank you very much.